We present Galahad at Blandings by P.G. Woodhouse, adapted for radio in four parts by Richard Usborne, with Richard Vernon as Lord Emsworth and Ian Carmichael as the Honourable Galahad Threepwood. Episode 2, Sundered Hearts. Lord Emsworth's sister, Lady Hermione, has installed herself with her husband, Colonel Egbert Wedge, as hostess and tyrant at Blandings Castle. Their daughter, Veronica, has gone to London to shop for a fine trousseau, as she is shortly to marry the young American multimillionaire, Tipton Plimsoll. At least, Veronica and her parents believe Tipton to be a multimillionaire and are delighted to get him into the family. But Lord Emsworth, just returned from New York, has told them that Tipton has lost his multimillions in the Wall Street crash.
Yes, Tipton had to ask me to send him $20. He was in prison.
What?
Prison?
Lost all his money? Clarence, where did you hear this?
About Tipton losing all his money, he told me himself, on the telephone. All these American hotels have telephones in the rooms. You order your meals through them.
Clarence, yes? Stop rambling.
Yes, tell us of the conversation you had with Tipton.
I'm telling you, it was very early in the morning. This voice said he was Tipton Plimsoll, the man engaged to my niece Veronica. That's your daughter, Hermione.
Yes, yes, yes.
He said he had lost all his money. Would I lend him $20? I forget what that would be in our currency. Not a big sum.
Clarence, get on with your story.
Hmm? No, well, I said, of course I would lend him $20. Then he said he needed it at once, and would I send it by messenger?
Clarence, are you making this up? How could Tipton have been in prison?
I can't remember now. Lots of people do go to prison, even in England, don't they?
So, that's the man who's arriving soon to marry our daughter.
Right. Yes. Yes, well, I must go. Feeding time for the Empress, you know.
Egbert?
Yes, old girl?
Do you think this is true?
Must be, I'm afraid.
You know how Clarence gets things muddled up.
He does, I agree. As a rule, I write off anything he tells me as just babble from the padded cell. But, in this case, I mean Tipton told him himself.
Yes.
And touched him for $20.
Yes.
Well, there you are, then. Obviously, Tipton had been speculating on Wall Street and the crash has wiped him out.
Yeah.
He isn't the first millionaire that has happened to, and I don't suppose he'll be the last. What steps do you propose to take, old girl?
Veronica must be told.
Of course. Can't have her going blindly into marriage and then having the groom telling her in the vestry that he hasn't a bean.
Money has nothing to do with it. Clarence says he was in prison.
I wonder what they jugged him for.
Vagrancy, probably, or begging in the streets. What does it matter? The point is, we cannot allow Veronica to marry a man with a prison record.
What do you propose to do?
Speak to her. Ring for Beach to tell Voules to have the car ready as quickly as possible. Veronica must write to Tipton, breaking the engagement.
Do you think she will?
Of course she will. I shall see to that. She always does what I tell her.
That's true. And I'll telephone your sister Dora and say you're coming.
As Lady Hermione prepared to leave, Sam Bagshot was arriving at the nearby Emsworth Arms. In love with Lord Emsworth's new secretary, Sandy Callender, he had unfortunately incurred her wrath and a broken engagement. So, on the advice of Galley, had come from London to try and make peace with Sandy. He settled down in the taproom to wait, and as he raised his glass to his lips, witnessed the appearance of a portly figure at the open door which gave on to the street. It was Beach, the butler from the castle, who, for the sake of his spreading figure, had walked to Market Blandings. As the barmaid drew his accustomed pint, Beach checked his timing by his large pocket watch, with some satisfaction.
Oh, dear. Now, let me see. That's 3 miles in, what, 51.5 minutes.
Oh.
Very good. Very good.
I think you've earned your pint, oh. Mr. Beach. Here you are.
Oh, thank you, Maisie.
Oh, that's a nice watch, Mr. Beach.
Yes, I won it here. First prize in the Christmas darts competition.
Fancy. Can I look at it?
Of course. I'll just take it off its chain. Oh, there. Don't go and drop it now.
Nice. Silver, is it?
Of course.
Afternoon, miss.
Afternoon, Mr. Evans. Oh. Pint of your usual.
Oh, thank you, Maisie. Bit hot for bicycling today. Afternoon, Mr. Beach.
Good afternoon, Constable.
Here, have you got a minute? I heard a good one from the Sarge this morning. I think you'll like it. Come outside, let me try it on you.
Can't we all hear it?
No, miss. No, you're too young to understand the sergeant sort of story. Come on, Mr.
Men.
As Constable Evans took Beach outside, Sam Bagshot, up to then silent in the corner, waiting for Galley and with his mind on Sandy, came back to the bar for a refill, and spotted Beach's watch still on the counter.
I say, miss, that's a nice-looking timepiece.
Yeah, it belongs to old Fatty.
Old Fatty?
Yeah, Mr. Beach, butler up at the castle. He'll tell you about it if you ask him when he comes back. That's his name inscribed on the back, see? Oh!
But Sam had seen something more exciting than Beach's watch. Through the open door, Sandy Callender, pushing her bicycle down the street. It was her day to change the library books for the castle. In the heat of the moment, Sam absent-mindedly pocketed the watch and rushed out after her.
Sandy!
Sandy! Oh, Mr. Beach! Mr. Evans!
What is it?
That man's got your watch! Oh. He put it in his pocket and ran off with it.
Oh, he did. It will soon see about that.
After him.
And so saying, Constable Evans mounted his bicycle and gave chase. But Sandy had seen Sam too, and had jumped on her bicycle and pedalled off. And however fast Sam ran, Sandy easily increased the distance between them. It was only a matter of seconds before the constable closed in on Sam from behind.
Gotcha!
Well, what do you want, constable?
You, what are you doing with that watch?
What watch?
This watch in your pocket there!
Oh, good Lord, that belongs to the fat man at the Emsworth Arms. I took it away by mistake.
Oh.
I'll take it back to its owner.
I'll take it back to its owner.
Oh, will you? That's very nice of you. Here you are. He'll be amused.
Oh. Well,
can't you say anything but ho?
Yes, I can say something except ho. I can say you're pinched. You come along with me.
It was not the moment to lay hands on Sam's shoulder. Sandy had escaped him. He felt a fool for having run so far for nothing. To have his collarbone massaged now was the last straw. With a reflex action that would have interested Dr. Pavlov, he smote the constable to the ground with a power-driven fist to the right eye. Then he picked up the bicycle and rode off in hot pursuit of Sandy.
Stop, thief! Catch him! He's got my bike! And he has assaulted me!
But by now there was no sign of Sandy. So Sam made for Blandings Parva, the little hamlet under the castle walls. Disposing of the hot bicycle against a stile, he entered the Blue Boar in the guise of a blameless hiker. He asked for refreshment and then went to the telephone and rang Galley, who was in the library at the castle.
Galley, is that you?
Sam, where are you?
The Blue Boar, Blandings Parva. Galley, I'm in trouble.
Stay there. I'll be with you as soon as possible.
But as Galley went downstairs for his hat, he was delayed by his brother Clarence emerging from his study.
Galahad, I won't stand it. I shall assert myself. I shall take a firm line.
Take two, if you wish, my dear fellow. This is Liberty Hall. What are you planning to take a firm line about?
This Callender girl. She's driving me mad. She covers my desk with letters, which she says I must answer immediately. She keeps producing them like a deaf dog, bringing his deaf bones into the dining room. Piles and piles of letters.
Fan mail, do you think?
And what is she doing to my study? It stinks of disinfectant and furniture polish. And I can't find a thing.
Yes, I saw her tidying it up.
Messing it up, you mean?
Well,
it's hard. I go to America to attend a sister's wedding, and when I come back, expecting to have a little peace at last with no sisters, what do I find? Not only that another sister has come to stay with all her family and friends, but that she has introduced into my home a bespectacled girl with red hair whose object seems to be to give me a nervous breakdown.
It's just zeal, Clarence. You get it in the young.
Zeal?
What you have got to realize is that you are a godlike figure to young Sandy. She's heard about you in legend and song. You awe her. She looks on you as a cross between a sultan of the old school and a grandfather.
Grandfather?
Well, a great-grandfather, then. And if she's given you all that homework, you'd better buckle down to it, hadn't you?
I won't. I'm going to see my pig.
Oh, well, if that's your attitude, I'll come with you. But you'll catch it from Sandy when she finds you've played hooky.
They had been some minutes at the Empress's Bijou residence. gazing with suitable reverence at the silver medalist's superb contours, when a voice hailed them. It belonged to a long, thin young man who was coming towards them.
It's Tipton Plimsoll, Clarence. American millionaire going to marry our niece Veronica. Got it?
No.
Greetings, Tipton. When did you get here?
Hello, Mr. Threepwood. I've just arrived. Lord Emsworth. They told me at the house you might be here. You don't know a V's around.
V? V?
Veronica. She's in London, Tipton.
Oh, darn it. When do you expect her back?
Well, I couldn't say. She's buying clothes, so I doubt if you can hope to see her for several days. Still, you've always got me. Did you have a good trip?
Swell, thanks.
You're looking very bobbish.
I'm fine, thanks.
Tipton Plimsoll. Last time we talked, it was in New York on the telephone.
You're right, Lord Emsworth. And talking of that, I owe you $20.
My dear fellow, no.
I'll give you a check when we get back to the house.
No, really, you mustn't dream of it. I'm amply provided with funds, and you cannot possibly afford it. Let's forget the whole thing. You see, Galahad, Tipton lost all his money on the New York Stock Exchange.
Is this true?
No, of course not. I'm afraid I must have misled Lord Emsworth that night in New York. I never lost a nickel in the market. All I wanted was $20 to get self and friend out of the pokey. Somebody got away with my wallet that night, and the cop told me that bail could be arranged if someone would loan me the needful. Willie Alsop, who was also in the cell with me, told me that his uncle, Lord Emsworth, was at the plaza and might provide.
You've been pinched?
Pinched is right.
Drunk and disorderly?
Drunk and disorderly is right.
Well, well, D&D. I was always getting judged for D&D myself in my younger days. How are the prisons in New York, Tipton? Well, much the same as on this side, I should imagine. The place not to get jug is in Paris. I remember on one occasion, after a rather sprightly evening at the Belle Boulier, Buffy Struggles was attempting...
They were interrupted by the appearance of a sturdy figure in trousers and a smock. Lord Emsworth's pig girl, Monica Simmons, arrived with the Empress's food.
Good morning, Lord Emsworth. I'd heard you'd arrived. Glad to be back, I wouldn't wonder. No place like home, I always say. How do you think the piggy-wiggy's looking?
Oh, capital, capital.
Yes, she makes jolly short work of her meals on the Whipple diet.
Whipple.
5,700 calories a day to include proteins, 4 pounds, 5 ounces. Carbohydrates, 25 pounds. You could say she's bursting with health and snuffle. Old Augustus Whipple knew his weights and measures all right.
Capital, capital. Miss Simmons, this is Mr. Tipton Plimsoll from America.
How do, Monica?
You know my brother Galahad, of course.
What do, Monica?
Oh, by the way, Lord Emsworth, I nearly forgot to ask you. Who would that boy be? Small boy with a face like a prune run over by a bus.
Small boy, face like a prune?
She means Dame Daphne Winkworth's son. Excellent description. Why do you bring him into the conversation, Monica?
He keeps hanging around here trying to let the Empress out of her sty.
He does that?
I caught him at it yesterday and again this morning.
The next time he does it, give him a good hard knock and call me.
I'll rub his face in the mud.
Sandy Callender will rub your face in the mud, Clarence, if you don't go back and tend to your correspondence.
Oh, yes, I suppose so.
See you later, Tipton.
So long, Gally.
Mr. Plimsoll, you're the fellow who's marrying Veronica Wedge, aren't you?
That's me. And Willie Alsop was speaking to me about you not long ago.
Was he? About me?
And in the highest terms, I don't mind telling you. He gave you a rave notice. In fact, if it interests you, let me tell you, he loves you like a ton of bricks. And his dearest wish is that you'd consent to sign your future correspondence, Monica Alsop.
What? I can't believe it.
Why not? What's your problem?
He's so far above me.
A couple inches shorter, I would have said.
Intellectually, I mean.
Whoever told you that Willie Alsop had an intellect?
He looks so spiritual.
So do I, but you can't go by that. Willie's a regular guy, all right, but what's his rating with you? How'd you react if he asked you to marry him? You think he had the right idea, or would you give him the horse's laugh and say, drop dead, you little squirt?
He's not a little squirt.
Well, that's what he says he is. She's so majestic, and I'm such a little squirt, were his exact words. Am I to tell him he's got no chance of bringing home the bacon?
If you mean
Would I accept him if he asked me to marry him? Yes, I would. I'd jump into his arms.
Well, I'm not sure I'd advise that. I don't want to seem personal, but you're on the solid side and he's kind of flimsy. You might fracture something. But what you say is good news, and I'll go and tell Willie.
Will you really?
Right away.
Oh, Mr. Plimsoll, you're an angel.
I started life as a Boy Scout. I can't seem to shake off the habit of doing my day's good deed. Now I must go and find Willie.
Wilfred Allsop had been detained for the last hour by his future employer, Dame Daphne Winkworth. She liked to get to know her staff by firing tough personal questions at them. Afterwards, an exhausted Willie had gone to his room to bathe his forehead. As he emerged, he met Tipton, who immediately got down to brass tacks.
Well, Willie, I've just been having a chat with that Simmons broad.
Would you mind not referring to Miss Simmons as a broad?
Oh, sorry, slip of the tongue, but I have news for you. Good news. Hmm? It appears that you're her dream man.
What?
That's what she told me. She didn't actually say she'd die for one little rose from your hair, but she said that if you asked her to marry you, she'd jump into your arms.
You aren't kidding.
No, I'm not, nor was she. All you got to do is walk up to her, wipe some mud off her face, clasp her in your arms, and kiss her.
Huh. I couldn't do it.
Why not?
I haven't the nerve.
The very words I used when I wanted to propose to V. Then I remembered some drinking advice I heard from an old friend to someone who was letting I dare not wait upon I would. Before action starts, always have a good, quick snort out of a bottle by way of a send-off.
And you did?
I did, and it altered the whole setup.
You became the dominant male?
With bells on.
And asked V to marry you?
Ordered would be a better word.
What did you actually say?
By way of leading into the thing, my woman, if I remember right. Woman. But don't worry about the dialogue. It's clasping in arms and kissing that puts the act across. Mm. Listen, Willie, in the glove compartment of my car, there's a well-filled flask. Slip it in your pocket, and about 5 minutes before the kickoff, take a good, stiff gargle of it. You'll be surprised.
Can I risk it?
No risk involved. It's good scotch.
I was thinking of Dame Daphne Winkworth, who runs the school for girls where I'm going to teach music. A rabid teetotaler, and she'd fire me like a shot if she caught me drinking.
Chance it, Willie. You'll never get to first base with the Simmons broad. Sorry, girl, if you don't.
Well, if you say so.
Well, that's settled, then. Shall we just run through the scenario to see if you got it straight?
It might be as well.
Walk up to the adored object.
Walk up to the adored object.
Clasp in arms.
Clasp in arms.
Kiss.
Kiss.
And say hoarsely, my woman.
My woman.
You can't miss.
Meanwhile, Galahad had hurried down to the Blue Boar, where Sam Bagshot told him the whole sorry story. Galahad heard him out and promised to come up with a plan for Sandy and Sam to meet for peace talks. But Sandy, knowing that Sam was pursuing her and guessing that Gally was advising him, came up with her own plan. She would escape from both of them. She went to see her employer.
Lord Emsworth?
Yes, Miss Canada, yes.
I wonder if you could possibly spare me for a day or two. My father is very ill.
I'm sorry. Too bad, quite.
Will it be all right if I go away for a few days?
Certainly. Certainly. Stay away as long as you like. My brother-in-law, Colonel Wedge, has just told me he's catching some sort of train this afternoon. Going to Sussex or somewhere. To see his godmother, I think. You could drive to the station with him. Excellent idea. Yes, quite.
Oh, thank you very much.
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, I'll go and pack my things. Oh, by the way, I found this letter.
What?
I've fallen into the coal scuttle in the library. It's dated a month back. I think you should answer it at once.
That's the name. Whipple? God bless my soul. God bless my soul. Galahad? I'm glad you're back. Galahad, the most wonderful thing has happened.
What's that, Clarence?
You've heard me speak of Augustus Whipple.
The man who wrote the book you're always reading?
Yes, On the Care of the Pig. Miss Callender has just found a letter from him, to me.
What does he want? An exclusive interview with the Empress?
He wants to come here to see her. He has heard so much about her. And he wants to take some photographs. He writes from the Athenaeum.
Ah, yes. I lunched with him there once.
You mean You know Augustus Whipple?
Yes, it was when I was thinking of writing my memoirs. I wanted some first-hand facts about an uncle of his who'd been a member of the Pelican. He was very well known in medical circles, this uncle. You see, at the age of 80, he grew a second set of teeth and used to crack Brazil nuts with them. Died at the age of 82 of a surfeit of Brazil nuts.
Hardly surprising.
Not at all a bad fellow, Whipple. Are you going to have him to stay at the castle?
Of course.
Good.
I've written a telegram to him saying he must come and stay as long as he likes. I shall give it to Voules to send off. They'll never get it right when I take them on the telephone. Voules is driving Egbert and Miss Callender to the station today.
Sandy Callender is leaving you?
Only for a few days, probably. Her father's been taken ill. I have given her leave to stay with him as long as is necessary.
Really? Really? Look, Clarence, give me your telegram. I happen to be going to Blandings Parva now. There's a post office there. I'll deal with it.
Why, thank you, Galahad. That would be capital.
Galley realized that Sandy's story of a sick father was a ruse. The father had been a friend of his, and he had died 8 years before. But Galahad now knew how he was going to have Sam installed as a guest in the castle by the time Sandy got back. And so it was in mellow mood that he set off, first to the post office, then to the Blue Boar.
Oh, sorry for the delay, Sam. I've got good news for you.
Good. I can do with some.
To business, then. Sandy knows you're hereabouts, that you're pursuing her, and that I am in your corner advising you. You can't go back to the Emsworth Arms, but you have got a shelter from the law. Sandy has dishonestly done a temporary bunk. I admire that girl, Sam.
I love her, damn it.
And now I've got a surefire plan. Listen. My brother got a letter today from one of his heroes, Augustus Whipple, author of a fat book about pigs. Now, this Whipple has asked to be allowed to come and see the Empress.
Well?
Clarence had drafted a telegram saying something like, delighted, come any time and stay till Christmas if you like. I said I was going to the post office and would send it. He was delighted. So was I. I changed the message to, Lord Emsworth regrets he has German measles. Will communicate when recovered. So now everything's simple.
How?
You come to the castle tomorrow as Whipple. Then you can stay as Clarence's privileged guest, and when Sandy returns, as she must sooner or later, you'll have her at your mercy. I don't want your thanks, just any comments.
Yes, one. I won't do it.
Won't do it? Why?
Me go to Lord Emsworth saying, Yoo-hoo, I'm Whipple. The very thought of it makes my toes curl. I know nothing about pigs. Beach will recognise me as the man who pinched his watch. Constable Evans will catch up with me. And the lady somebody, your sister you told me about, she'll attach herself to the seat of my trousers and have me out immediately she sees what's going on. No, Galley, there are limits, no.
What?
No.
I don't know what's wrong with the younger generation these days. Your father would have jumped at the idea.
No, Galley.
Is that your last word?
Yes. No.
Oh, well, if you won't, you won't. But I still consider your objections finicky. I shall have to start again, that's all. Remembering that Clarence will be surprised at getting no answer from Whipple, except perhaps a get-well card.
Back at the castle, Colonel Wedge, waiting in the drive for Voules to bring the car round, was astonished to see Tipton Plimsoll standing by a gleaming Rolls-Royce. Surely it can't be Tipton's own. The man who had lost all his money on Wall Street, the man who would shortly be getting a letter from his daughter cancelling their engagement.
Tipton, my dear fella, good to see you. Whose is the Rose?
It's mine. Handsome, isn't she? Oh. I bought her 2 days ago. I hope feel like her. Oh, and yes, I'd like to show you something else, Colonel. This diamond necklace I picked up for V in London. Great disappointment she isn't here. I think she'll like it, don't you?
But can you afford it, Tipton?
Well, yes, I can. In fact, it only cost me $17,000. They knocked off a bit for cash.
No.
Not feeling well, Colonel?
Well, a touch of my old malaria.
Too bad. Nasty thing to have.
It was then that Tipton realized that the Colonel was under the same delusion that Lord Emsworth had been, that he'd lost his fortune in the recent Wall Street crash. Tipton could have reassured him there and then, but Beach suddenly appeared to summon the Colonel to the hall. It was a telephone call from Lady Hermione in London.
Hello, old girl.
I'm coming back the day after tomorrow, Egbert. You'll be away by then, won't you?
Yes, I shall be leaving for the station in a few minutes. How about that letter, the one you gave V to write?
No bother. You know what a sensible gal she is if things are explained to her.
You mean she's written Tipton that letter?
Yes, I posted it just now.
Oh.
What did you say, Egbert?
Oh, nothing, nothing. Just clearing my throat. When do you think the letter will arrive here?
The colonel was struggling to decide whether or not to break the bad news. No. Time enough for the old girl to learn the awful truth when she returned to the castle.
Tomorrow morning, I imagine. Why?
I was just wondering.
Tipton will get it when he arrives.
He has arrived.
Oh, has he? Does he seem terribly distressed, poor fellow?
No, not terribly.
How brave of him. I hope the letter won't upset him too much.
So do I. So do I. Well, old girl, the car's waiting and I must go to the station.
It was at this moment that Galahad returned from the Blue Boar. The colonel grabbed him, sat him down, and told him the whole story.
Galahad, that letter must not be allowed to reach Tipton.
Exactly the same thought occurred to me.
And I shall not be here when it comes.
No, but I shall be delighted to place my services at your disposal.
Galahad, you're the best brother-in-law a man ever had. It'll mean you're getting up at some unearthly hour to catch the postman, won't it?
That's all right. If Larks can do it, I can do it. So off you go with a light heart. That letter will be delivered to me, not to Tipton. You can always count on Galley in a crisis.
In episode 2 of Galahad at Blandings by P.G. Woodhouse, Lord Emsworth was played by Richard Vernon and the Honourable Galahad Threepwood by Ian Carmichael. Lady Hermione was Elizabeth Spriggs, Egbert and Beach Harold Innocent, Sam Simon Treves, Sandy Susanna Fellows, Monica Moyer Leslie, Wilfred Jonathan Cecil, Tipton Alan Marriott and Evans Chris Emmett. The narrator was Murray Watson. Galahad at Blandings was adapted for radio by Richard Osborne, and the producer was Gareth Edwards.